Planning Commission for April 21st, 2015. Let's do the pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to welcome each person here this evening for the Sutherland Planning Commission for April 21st. We'll be having three public hearings this evening. If you have your agenda there, you'll notice that there's 2015-04 PAZC, the Habitat for Humanity, will be the first one, and then 2015-01 VAR, the Fairview Estates, and then the 2015-03 VAR with Guido. So if you're prepared for those. Is there anybody here from the media? If not, then we'll go right into the approval of the minutes for the last two meetings, March 17th and April 6th.
I make a motion to approve the minutes for March 17th, 2015, and April 6th, 2015.
I'll second it.
Commissioner Klassen? Aye.
Aye.
Commissioner Flick.
I do that every week.
Commissioner Flick. We have three more, just so you know. Commissioner
Aye.
Flick.
Aye.
Commissioner Sarnowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Van Sickle.
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner.
Aye.
And Chair Lesby.
Aye.
Okay. First public hearing. We'll open this public hearing, 2015-04 PAZC, Habitat for Humanity. There's some disclosure statements that I need to read before we begin the public hearing here. The Planning Commission hears the public hearing, and all persons testifying shall be deemed parties to the application and must provide their name and full mailing address if they wish to be notified of the decision, continuances, appeals, or other procedural actions required by the code. Public testimony should be limited to those criteria and findings of fact or to other city or state land use standards that the person testifying believes apply to the proposed land use action. And anyone wishing to be considered as a party in this matter must raise an issue in person or in writing with sufficient detail to the city zoning code, providing specific applicable criteria to be relied upon in making a decision. Those criteria and findings of fact are in the city staff report. Affording the hearing body and parties to the hearing an opportunity to respond to an issue precludes appeal to the City Council or Land Use Board, or to seek damages in circuit court due to a condition of approval. This is a quasi-public hearing, and we need to ask the commission that are hearing this evening if there is any conflict of interest, or if you've visited the sites, or any financial interest, or ex parte contact, or personal bias in this matter. Does anyone have anything to report?
On the Guido matter, I sit on the board of directors for Knowles Estates, which is, I believe, also filed a rebuttal to their request.
Anybody else? I guess the question would be, is impartiality a problem or not?
I will not vote, because I also have statements to say on this hearing.
Okay, and so we need to identify those with party status. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to have party status? Okay, then I will call for a staff report.
Okay. Commissioners and Chair, this is the first item on the agenda, and you did read the hearing's disclosure statement, so you don't have to read it again unless somebody comes in afterwards. And so this first one is the comprehensive plan zone map amendment. The property zoned industrial M1, and they requested to zone it R2. The property is located at West 6th. Oak Street, and actually 4th Street is mixed in there too. It's a short bit of right-of-way, it's dead-ended at the moment. The purpose of the change is to commit the existing and future use of the property to residential use, with a plan by the applicant to demolish an existing dwelling and build I've read two different things, either a duplex, I think to build a duplex on two of the lots. And then there's an existing house on the other one that would remain as well, so that's the three lots, the three tax lots. Okay, just some highlights, because there's a lot of information, and there's also a lot of redundancy in plan amendments, because you're always talking about the comprehensive plan policies and the statewide goals and how well it meets. The applicant did a really good job in his application. I saw no reason to go through the same rigorous, you know, word for word explanation that he did. So findings are in my staff report. His report, of course, is part of the record. And I'll just try and do some highlights for you. If there's any questions, we can address those. The site itself is kind of an unusual big triangular shape of property there that was zoned industrial, I don't know how long ago, at least 20 years ago, I guess. And in the very corner up at this intersection of Oak and 4th and 6th are these two existing houses that kind of are separate from the whole rest of this triangle that drops down quite a bit in topography and is some smattering of underdeveloped industrial use. The area in general is residential, but then this, as it drops off and goes down towards town, it's an industrial piece. So it's a piece of land that's right in the middle of several zone categories, historically at least. And yet it's small. It's only a third of an acre with these three tax lots. So it's a small section, small corner of this piece. And so it's again, comprehensive plan and the zoning map designated as industrial, but the houses were there before the zoning. And that's an important part here, because that's the primary purpose, is to make those houses be able to stay residential and make them legitimate in their current use, and decide if that's what the future use should also be by going in and zoning it residential. This is a type 4 decision, so your action is a recommendation to the city council. And then they will hold a hearing just like this, and only they can change the zoning by ordinance. So they'll be interested in your recommendation though. This historically platted big triangle has some small lots, it has alleyways, it has streets. Some of those streets were vacated, then they were reinstated, that mainly being 4th Street. So there's some things that have happened over time, although the land has really never developed fully as industrial, and those three houses are still there. But they're considered non-conforming, and so there's legal limitations to that. If they were either expanded or destroyed, they'd have to be built as industrial. And so the purpose of this amendment is to provide certainty that the homes and the parcels can be improved for residential use now and also in the future. And the change to R2 will move the use category of the existing single-family residential uses from a pre-existing industrial zone to a permitted use in a R2 zone. And both the existing use and the physical development and character of that area complies really with the residential zoning. Now, if you step, 100 yards down and it goes down into this low piece where the industrial land is, it could very well be industrial. But there's good reason to go back and look at this and change the zoning to residential. And so in the criteria for making amendments, and I'm just going through my staff report on page 4 roughly, the first one is this going to be consistent with the comprehensive plan and all the facility plans and inventory documents? And so, the comprehensive plan has a lot of policies and a lot of information, and you can really narrow this down to a few goals that are applicable in this case. And one would be the economic goal. The city would take an active role in promoting the area's desirable retirement community through the advertisement enhancement of housing, recreation, health, transportation, and for senior citizens. So that's one policy that this application, and I think I probably reiterated this from the applicant, essentially supports that policy by giving it a residential plan designation instead of industrial, because they are existing houses there for, you know, use or reuse or rebuilding, and really doesn't have a, it's not taking away a big potential industrial site, is really what it amounts to. It's just taking three existing small lots and keeping them in your housing inventory and taking it out of the industrial inventory is not really appropriate for industrial to begin with.
Can I ask one question?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Are these three houses part of the entrance into an industrial area?
No. It's physically, it's no.
Because you kept talking about the houses are here in the industrial.
Yeah, and I you have to see it to know what I'm talking about, and I'm sorry if I'm being kind of vague, but it's this big triangle.
Is there a map for us to see? Because it really wasn't included in our package.
That's not good. Well, the applicant provided in his materials. This is easy enough to show you.
It's right here.
On the map.
It's part of the old mill.
And the rest of this is the high part up here.
All of this used to be a coal yard years ago.
It's pretty steep when you're up down here.
They changed the ground lines.
Does that make sense to you? All right. Okay, so another section of the plan that we would want to make sure you comply with is the public facility. Well, there's already sewer water there. Connections are already there. There's no change by giving it a residential zone. So this doesn't demand any new installations of anything. It'll stay single family-ish. Might be a duplex, but... there's no impact on that. Housing element, one of your policies in the comprehensive plan is to encourage the quick replacement of dilapidated or inadequate housing. There's a dilapidated house on the corner that is probably an attractive nuisance. I don't know what was on there, but I can imagine. And it should be replaced. And the city has another policy about undertaking a rehabilitation program for houses which need work in order to remain safe. So this would be doing that. The land use element conformance, and that really has to do with your, are you keeping your balance of housing and employment, buildable lands in sync, and you're not changing anything. They're already, they're so small. And they're in a residential use. They're not planned for a big industrial use at that very tip corner of the industrial zone, which is right against the residential zoning. So it doesn't make sense. So then you look at the next set of criteria, which is demonstrating that the most intense uses and density that would be allowed outright in the proposed zone, considering the site's characters, can be served through the orderly extension of urban facilities and services. Density is not going to change. Services are not going to change, so we're in conformance. The zone change criteria number three, evidence of change in the neighborhood or a mistake, you know, or inconsistency between the plan and the zoning map would warrant this amendment. I'd say neither of those. There's been no change in the neighborhood, and it's not a mistake. It was just taken, as a tract of this triangular shape that, like you said, was part of the old mill, so it just kind of fell into the boundaries of a historical parcel, and we know there has been no demand for industrial on that property, so maybe it was kind of a mistake. Whatever, it hasn't panned out, and it would be better served to leave those houses there and allow them to be legal and allow them to be, the dilapidated one, to be replaced. So, now the same, it says the applicant provided a total analysis of all the statewide goals, citizen involvement, land use planning, all the goals that you have in your own plan, and we have pretty much found there's no difference between them, and that your policies are more specific than ones I just mentioned, than the state goals, so there is no conflict in the goals. I did want to add one factual thing, and that is that I didn't realize the streets. Okay, so we have a transportation system plan. Oak Street is a designated local street, so it won't change very much. Right now it's paved with no curbs, gutters, or storm drains, or sidewalks. There's a ditch along the side. 6th Street is currently classified as a collector street by your TSP, so that will definitely be upgraded someday in your planning. It has an improved 24-foot wide surface with no gutters, curbs, or underground storm drainage. Just this ditch is on the side. And the one addition I would make is that 4th Street, and when you look at the maps, it's kind of confusing because 4th Street is a dead end right now, and it serves those three houses and maybe one more, two more lots, but I think they're vacant. And then it dead ends as you're going towards Kalapuya. But it was vacated, the rest of it, from beyond the houses, and then it was reinstated. So first it was there, and then it was vacated, then it was reinstated, and the transportation plan, it is planned to be a link between, as a kind of a shortcut over to Kalapuya rather than going up to Kalapuya, out to Kalapuya. And so that is already a 60-foot right-of-way in front of these homes, and it won't be anything more than a local street, so there's no reason to worry about trying to get any roadway dedication at this time, because there's already 60 feet. But that is planned to be a connecting street, and it's just information that I didn't realize until our trustee, Christy, who has had some interest by the other home there, had studied this pretty hard. Okay, so energy conservation and urbanization, there are no conflicts with those goals. And really, you know, that's the conclusion of my summary. I'm happy to answer any questions after you maybe heard from the applicant. But on page 12, there's a set of options for motions that you might make it easier for you to decide. You could either recommend approval based on the findings of both the applicant and the city. You could modify the approval to add some condition, or you could continue the hearing if you felt that was important as well.
Okay. At this time, then I'll open it for the applicant's report if he wants to come forward, state your name.
And there's a microphone up here.
Good evening. My name is Mark Garrett, and I'm representing Habitat for Humanity on the land use portion of this. There's a couple of board members here, so if you have questions of them concerning what their plans are, I'm sure they'd be glad to answer those. Just a couple of things. One, they are planning to build two individual residences rather than a duplex. There are two lots involved in this, actually maybe three platted lots, since they're proposing to do a boundary line adjustment once this is completed, and then place a single family dwelling on each of those lots in accordance with their normal operations for housing opportunities for first-time home buyers and so forth. So it's just by way of clarification on that. We reviewed the staff report. Staff did a great job at analysis. I don't know that we have a lot to offer beyond that. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have regarding the project.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone who wants to speak in opposition to this application? Any neutral comments? Any comments at all? You didn't come here for that, did you? All right. Now I don't have to worry about rebutting or anything else. If there's nothing from the audience, then I will close the public hearing and open it for commission discussion. It is closed and it is open.
Well, I think it's a good idea that they make it residential so they can do stuff and upgrade the housing on their lots.
Definitely.
There's a lot of that.
Okay. A big discussion here.
Organization is tremendous at upgrading defunct properties and putting people in houses that really do need it. My only thought would be is if they could clear these lots, if they could fit more than the two houses on them, that would even be great too. But again, I see absolutely no objection to changing the zoning on this and letting them get on with their business.
Okay. Does that mean you're making a recommendation?
I am. I'm going to shorten this up thanks to the paper blizzard that Carol has provided us on this. Would like a motion to change the zoning on the Habitat for Humanity properties.
Option one.
Okay. I'm going to move for option one on this. And let's run with it.
Okay. So we have a motion to recommend to the City Council approval of the requested plan and zone map amendments based on the findings of the application and the application of the city staff. Do I have a second?
Commissioner Classen?
Aye.
Commissioner Fleck?
Aye.
Commissioner Sarnowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Van Sickle?
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner?
Aye.
And Chair Lesby?
Aye. Okay, the next public hearing that we'll be hearing this evening is 205-01-VAR, a variance for Fairway Estates. Staff report is here again. We don't have to go through the anybody has a conflict or ex parte contact or any other thing, so we'll move right into the staff report.
Okay. Very good. I'm on the next staff report, Fairway Estates PUD Phase 2 Plan Modification and Variances. So there's the history of this, and there are a lot of little nitpicky details and measurements and percentages, and I'm going to try and make this clear, but no promises. But the request is for the Planning Commission to approve amending the Fairway Estates PUD by replacing zero lot line townhomes with detached single family dwellings and to obtain a garage and rear yard setback variance for 14 right now platted vacant lots. And just to confuse you right off the bat, they're not asking for a variance to put these townhomes in because the zone already allows it. It's just an explanation that they are changing what they had planned to have attached to detached. I'm just telling you that. And then as they do that, they find they want two variances. And so I don't believe the question of whether they can put attached housing on there is really on the table tonight. It's really, should they be granted the two variances? Okay, so we're in a residential district. Everybody knows where Fairway Estates is on the Umpqua Golf Course. And this goes back to an approval in 2007 by the Planning Commission for a 106 lot, which I hope these are right names. What I could find was the Oak Hills Planned Unit Development, which subsequently changed to Fairway Estates. And to the best of my knowledge, there, in that, at that time, there was not something like this, for instance, that showed us what you were actually going to, showed you what you were going to get when you approved that PUD. I don't think it got this specific. Neither the applicant or the city could find a comparable. So this is what we are starting with tonight. And then it's actually better, although there's a lot of numbers here, it's better, it's more accurate on this drawing that is, you know, I think on the back of the staff report and also was in your packet. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is really what we're focusing on. And so since there wasn't something to say, well, what are you varying from? It just became kind of a wide open field because they're not varying from something they had approved before. They're just varying from the standards themselves for the zoning. Okay, so this is an R1 zone, and just for a little background, that's meant to be low density and a preference for single family and duplex housing. So you're starting with that premise, but through the plan unit development review and approval process, attached homes were allowed, and that's not unusual in something like a PUD review. And those 14 lots were established for that purpose, and they're all lined up here against the golf course, and then some of this section is already developed across the street in that area.
The original 14 lots were originally approved with the coded setbacks that they needed?
No. See, the best I could figure out is it didn't say, it just said in the approval, final approval, you shall meet the zone standards. Well, that off the bat means, okay, they have to meet the setbacks. But then you dig deeper and, you know, we know these are small lots already. They're not single family 7,500 square foot lots. They're about 3,800 square foot lots. So you're starting out with a different product right off the bat because it was planned to be a zero lot line attached on one side. So I think it ends up being like duplex, 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 and the common wall in between the two units. So you would have had a bigger side yard, but then a common wall on the other side. And that I think that's as detailed as the concept was for that kind of a housing product at the time. And so then you go back and try and figure out, okay, now they want to change the setbacks. Well, what were the setbacks supposed to be? And nothing was said that we could find. And so you start at least with what is required. And what is required in the R1 is a certain lot width, certain lot depth, which they happen to meet, even though they're quite small. They meet the depth and width minimums. The house has to be 15 feet from the property line in the front. The garage has to be 20 feet from the property line in the front. And then the house has to be 10 feet from the rear in your zoning. Okay, so then you look at the PUD section separate from the zone, and it says in a PUD, things like floor area, lot coverage, building size, building height, lot area, lot dimensions can be modified without a variance, except the front and rear yards for structures on the perimeter of the project shall be the same as required by the underlying zone, unless they're increased, which of course is okay, and that a minimum front yard setback of 20 feet is required for any garage structure which opens facing a public or private street. And that's on page 3, third paragraph from the bottom. I feel like you need to find that again. That was what I found to try and figure out, well, what are we starting with in the 07 approval, and what can we do here? Okay, so moving along, what we've got in this sketch then is they have to get a variance because the variance section says if you're losing any more than 10%, you have to go to the planning commission. Less than 10%, they theoretically could have gone just for administrative approval. But then, and we know they're more than 10% reduction. The front is 25%, and the back is 50%. Going from 10 to 5, the front's going from 20 to 15. All right. Now, you're not with me?
Well, I am. I'm just, go on.
Okay. Yeah, just bear with me, and if I get through this, and you can get it halfway right, we'll keep talking about it and get through. Okay, but so today, it was really great because I've got to go look at what's here, because it always looks much better on a flat piece of paper than it does when you go there and see it was there. And just for information, the back, you know, I pictured the 5 foot setback as being not a big deal because there's this 15-foot open space that the HOA owns right next adjoining the golf course. But when you go look at it, there's a sheer wall that's like 6-8 feet. A rock wall above, you know, right at the property ends, and then it goes up, and then the golf course is up here. So it's not like you're walking out your back door and kind of wandering out into the golf course unless you have a ladder. So it just happens to be on a hill, and that was an interesting perspective from what I was thinking it might have been.
So they're like below the golf course?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I just eyeballed it.
So they're going from a 10-foot backyard to a 5-foot backyard.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now you don't just walk out into the golf course from that 5 foot. That 5 foot is between the structure and the wall.
That's not very... less than my hall.
What happens if there's an earthquake and that wall collapses?
Well, so hopefully they had a geotech done on each one of these. No, this is not in the ROH, this is in the other one. Yeah. We all live with that uncertainty, let's face it. But anyway, you just need to know that. And then the other physical thing that's happening is in the front, where they're trying to reduce the front, the driveway is going to be on an angle because it also goes up like 6 feet to where the lot starts, and then you go down to the street. So the driveways won't be flat, they'll be on an angle, which is not uncommon. You can see some of them up there that way right now, but...
4th Street's that way too. Mm-hmm. A lot of houses up there.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. It's just important to understand what you're losing or gaining by this request.
Are there sidewalks in front of these houses?
There are no sidewalks. And the streets, you know, were proved to be narrower with no sidewalks, and it ends at a curb. Just to kind of complicate even more, there's a utility easement right here that's 5.5 feet between the garage and the property line, which the applicant, you know, claims will give you that extra 5.5 feet for your car to park in the driveway, so you get 15 plus 5.5. But that goes right to the curb, so... So does that give you 20 feet as the minimum? Yeah, it's all pavement.
That's it, that's part of the street, right?
Well,
that's an easement.
Long truck's gonna be more than 15 feet long. It'll be sticking out on the road.
I know.
That's
right.
And if your streets are already narrow, and if you have a park here and a park here, you're...
Well, and they're not really narrow. I mean, you have narrow streets in your old town, too. It's just there's no sidewalk. There's no landscape strip. It's just curb and pavement. Okay, so... I thought I would add just that the lot coverage of this kind of a plan is the maximum is 50%, and my best guess with the house and the impervious surface is it's about 70%, and I had to really guess because I didn't have skill drawing.
Is there a minimum square footage for the homes there, or?
I don't think you require a minimum square footage, but, you know, obviously it's being used for the home. There's no real, there's a little tiny bit of yard right here. And there'll be some yard, there'll be 5 foot yards on the side. and a little back space back here. But, you know, to a lot of people, that's the way they prefer to have more house and less yard. So that's definitely what this is. And this, at this point, it'll be detached rather than attached. To modify a PUD, there's some criteria. And to modify an approved plan, there's some criteria. And they are a long list that says you shall meet all of these criteria, or at least try and explain why you can't. And to sum it all up, is a conclusive section here on the page 6 that says, this definitely is a major change, and so that's why we're in a hearing. There's at least 3, 5, 6, and 7 of the first set of criteria I think you have trouble proving, and 2 and 3 of the second set. And the city finds that the 40-foot wide lots are narrow, so that the proposed side yards will be unusable, that the rear yard will be reduced, that the driveway length will be reduced, and the impervious lot coverage will be increased to an estimated total of about 70%. The front yard setback reduction from 20 to 15 for the garages doesn't appear to be even allowed, but suppose this is home rule, you can do what you want, but the code seems to say that's the only thing you can't do.
Is there a percent that you can't, isn't there a maximum percentage of the lot that you
could build on?
50%.
It's 50% in here, but then other places it's only 35%.
In the RH zone, it's 35.
Okay.
And they're wanting about 70-75%?
In this case. PUD. But it's a PUD, and as I mentioned earlier, PUDs, you can increase lot coverage. I don't know if you knowingly did that when you approved the PUD, but the Planning Commission. That's kind of accepted because you're getting this golf course. Did that come with the PUD? Or was that separate?
It was separate.
Yeah. Well, theoretically, you're intensifying the development, and you've got this open space. So you're giving up the big lots and the big open space around the lots in order to have this, exposure onto a golf course, which is great. So the lot coverage, I don't know that it's really an issue here because it is a PUD, and the PUD is approved back in 07. What the question really is, if any more than a certain percentage in the reduction of the setbacks requires a variance, and that's why you're here. So, on page 7 is our 3 motion ideas. And my conclusion was that you could approve the rear yard setback if you were inclined. There is a golf course back there. It's not meant to be accessed from these lots very easily. But it's difficult to find a way to approve the front yard garage setback for me. And I'll also kind of jump the gun here, and the applicant's going to tell you he doesn't necessarily want both, but he wants the option to go either back or forward with these two variances. He doesn't think that he'll need both, but I don't know how you approve it that way. So
that's what number 3 is.
So you can either, 1, approve it with some revised findings, which we could come up with some way to want to, or you could continue this because you need more information, or you could deny it based on the findings that you have in front of you. And in that motion is to approve or deny the garage and approve the rear yard as a sort of a compromise. So that's all I have.
All right. Do the applicant wish to report?
Steve Lepark with IE Engineering, 809 Southeast Pine.
It is, but it doesn't work out for them. I'm going to have to pick it up and stick it in your face.
We can hear you.
I did take a few pictures out there that I wanted to share, and I've got a board. Do you have somewhere to, usually there's a stand here.
Do you have the key to that room?
It's open.
Oh, is it? There's popping here.
And those are just smaller versions. I've got a board, but I figured it may be easier for you to look at them.
Is this good? Everybody see?
This is actually page 6 out of the original PZ approval. And I wanted you to, there, it has the housing element and the land use conformance in here, kind of explaining what the intent of the original PZ was.
Sorry, let's try not to take one of these.
Yeah, because that is the setback that the city and the grass are using, right? So, yeah, everything in there right now is built to the setback standard, which I didn't bring a copy. Ross had sent me a copy of it, but the buildings in the subdivision until now, except the zero lot line, there's no setback. There's one house over a lot line. All the other setbacks meet the city standards.
What was the question in these?
The question was, are those houses
20-foot setback?
Yeah, they meet the 20-foot okay. setback for the garage and the 15 for the house.
Okay, good.
Could you explain to us what pictures we're looking at?
I'll get to that. And, yeah. I'll get going and then I'll go through the pictures here. And yeah. So anyway, originally, in 2007, this was approved as a PUD. And a lot of times, as you know, PUDs is a variance process. So as Carol was stating, a lot of the lots, like especially when you start putting a duplex, the townhouses over those lots, the requirement for the setback and what the city's been approving on the buildings is for a single family, it's 5 feet, or a single story, it's 5 feet, and for a two-story, it would be 10 feet, and that would be for side lot yards. The front yard is 15 from the house, 20 from the garage, and then the backyard's 10 feet from the back of the house to the back property line. But so what's kind of happened, the original plan for the development, there was 106 lots approved, 96 got built and platted. Currently, there's, I think, about 35 of the lots have been built so far. Most of those houses have been built by Ross Development. There's a couple houses up there that he sold lots for that were the bigger single family lots that are on the west side of the development. But most every other house or townhouse in there, Ross has built as a spec or had someone order a house, built it for him, and continued on. So currently that's the mode he's in. He builds spec houses and spec, you know, and then sells them, and then once he sells them, he builds another one. So he's pretty much vested into the development. So out of 95, six lots, he's got 35 with houses, and there's some that aren't sold. So he's got, you know, he's invested in the community, and he's building houses and you know, developing the property. So anything that happens up here, he's the guy putting all the money into this thing. It affects him. He didn't want to have something approved or put something forward that he thinks is going to devalue or make the subdivision or PUD not a good place for people to live, because he's still got a bunch of lots out there that he's building houses on. He's going to sell them. And one of the reasons, if you look at the first pictures I took, it's a gated community, and some of the first ones I took were just some of the amenities as you go in. You know, you drive in, I don't know how many, I'm sure a lot of you have probably been in the subdivision up there, or if not, but this is the entrance here, and if you notice a lot of the landscaping and stuff, this is set up, and kind of this, one of the selling things is low maintenance for everybody, including the homeowners association. When, of course, Ross, once he sells enough of the lots, you know, they'll start to take over. Now, being he's got more than half the lots still in his possession, he's still, I'm sure, in total control of that. But as you can see, a lot of the landscaping and the amenities that he's put in are the lower, you know, maintenance ones. This is a little waterfall he put in, and a little fountain there. So part of the PUD, yeah, there isn't as much open space on your lot. I mean, these lots aren't set up for kids to go play baseball in the backyard like they are in Montclair. The whole idea and what was approved by the Planning Commission with the lot sizes we had is that wasn't what the plan development was all about. It was building lots that had good size houses on them that were affordable, hopefully, to people that, you know, young families, and also for elderly people, low maintenance. So if you're on the go, you don't have a big yard to mow in the backyard. I mean, you got your driveway going in, you got some landscaping, and if you want to sit out on the backyard and talk to the golfers as they come by, you can. So, I mean, that's, you know, pretty much what was approved. And I think if you look at the original approval and kind of what he's done up there, I think there's no argument that he's kept with kind of the model that he said, here's what we're going to do. You know, there's these open spaces. This here is actually down below, I don't know if you know where Cougar Canyon is on the golf course, but this is a little recreation area he set up so people with kids can go down there and play basketball, and there's swings and stuff down there. So, but, you know, as Carol was saying, these lots, there's just not a lot of extra. You got a 40-foot wide lot, and you got a 10-foot setback. If you have a bank or anything in there, it's not for, you know, that's not what the purpose of the subdivision or the PUD was. It was more probably people that really don't want to maintain a yard. And that's kind of who he's selling to. So, but anyway, so that's kind of what those pictures kind of show. This one's more just to show you, well, this is kind of the landscaping they're putting in. You know, it's, like I say, it's low maintenance. There's not a lot of grass. Most of the grass is probably on the single family homes on the west side that are bigger. They got bigger yards. They're more probably like a traditional subdivision home that you would see, you know. And then if you turn over the page, I just took some different pictures of different houses there, and there was probably a little misunderstanding in my application. There is, he's built some non-attached houses on smaller lots, but on some of the lots that were actually a little wider than the smaller 40-footers, he's ended up with, you know, he's built, there were some that were 50, 45, and he's actually built on some of those. Here, this was his standard townhouse lot, one of them here, and so you can see the driveway coming in, you know, the open area here, you know, here actually the garage sticks out farther than the house, you know, so this picture here is actually looking from lot 46 and 47 across the street. There's also some smaller lots over there. I think those lots were averaging, one of them was 50, one was 45, so these are actually kind of the smaller houses that he's been building there.
What street is that?
That's on, that's right across the street from the one we're on there.
So that's on Wildcat?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. That's looking from lot 47
across
the street. Across
the street.
What size houses does he want to build on these lots? What is the square footage?
If you look, I think that one that he's got going there, I think they're around 1,700, the smaller. But one of the reasons we're looking for the variances and stuff, the problem, which I kind of explained in the original application, let me get to that in probably just a minute. So this is kind of what the lots were set up for, was these townhouse kind of lots. Now this picture here shows a townhouse lot with two of the smaller lot houses on it that kind of like what we're planning on building on the new ones. And one of the things you'll notice is when you go from the duplex lot to more of the house that sets on its own lot, you gain a lot of open space because you gain the 10 feet in between the two houses. All of a sudden it doesn't have, you know, doesn't have house on it. And that's one of the, what happened is a lot of the people that were coming and looking at the townhouses said, hey, we would just soon have our own house with our own wall. So that's when he started building some of these other unattached ones on some of the bigger lots that were 50 feet, 45 feet, 47 feet. He had a little more room, he could get some square footage. So as far as getting square footage and keeping the setbacks where they need to be, where, you know, per standard city subdivision would be, the townhouses work fine for that because you get a build right over the lot up to the property line, so you gain a bunch of square footage, plus your roof line gets higher because the building structure is bigger. So that's the, you know, this kind of gives you a real view. Well, if you put all townhouses in there, here's what it'd look like. If you put the single attached, here's what it's going to look like, which is a lot more of an open look, I think, because you got, they're broke up
The single attached went to two stories to get the same square footage.
They're considered a one story because the whole house is under the roof line. So if you were a two story, you'd have to have a 10-foot side yard setback. Mm-hmm. So they have to be one story. So they got to be contained under the roof line. So they do have lofts in them, but they're not considered a two story. They're considered a one story. But anyway, so he started with this. He's built some of these on some of his bigger lots, but one of the problems he's having is to get the price he needs to get for the quality of homes he's building and having the square footage. He's having a hard time getting the houses to comp out from the appraisal on what they're worth. So he says, I want $250,000 for the home. It's only got 1,700 square feet, and they do all the comps around Sutherland, and they say, well, we'll only loan $200,000 on it. So that's fine for guys coming from California or someone that's got a big down payment, because they can just flop out the extra money, buy the house they want it, and they move on. The people that don't have a lot of cash and are the first-time home buyers and stuff, because he doesn't have the square footage in there, then he has a hard time comping it out and building the quality home he wants to build, and being able to sell to the person that may not have a big down payment to cover that difference between the appraised value and what the house is selling for. So that's one of the reasons he's looking at doing this. His current floor plan he has now, which you guys have a copy of it, and I probably have... I think the square footage on it was about 1,700 feet on the main floor, if I remember correctly. Somewhere in that range. Yeah, here it is. The floor plan the exhibits are all based on there. The bottom floor is 1,469 square feet for the living area, 426 feet for the garage, which is a total of 1,895 feet. So, and that plan, when he came to me, he said, hey, you know, this plan, I'm 5 feet from, you know, I need five more feet to fit this on here. So we were looking at it, and like Carol was saying, some of those lots, not every lot goes right up there. The ground on the golf course does this. Some of the lots are actually a little higher than the golf course. Some of them are a little lower. The worst case scenario is probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 feet, maybe 8 at the most. So that was one of the reasons when I was putting the variance together. If we had some flexibility that some of the homes, hey, there's not as much room in the back, if we can move them forward, if some of them, if there is and we want to keep them back, we can move them back. So that's why we were kind of wanting, because we're asking for 14 of these things, you know, basically cover this whole block. We don't know if this is going to be the exact model he builds on every one. But, you know, it is a PUD, and, I mean, you know, and like Carol said, a lot of times he didn't have a house picked out at the time, and maybe should have asked for different setbacks. But as far as the back setback, when we look at that, you've got, you know, 10 feet's the standard from the property line, but this subdivision also has a 15-foot open space right behind it. So from the subdivision edge to the house is 25 feet, this open area there. So by reducing it 5, yeah, no one could ever build in that open space. You would still have a larger back area. It's not necessarily your lot. But a lot of times when you're sitting there, if you're looking out on the golf course, there's no fences, there's nothing, you're just kind of looking out, you know, over the golf course. So,
or the brick wall.
Or the brick wall, and you know, you got golf balls coming in on you. I mean, there's certain things on living on a golf course. If you look at how he has, like, the back of the house there, and there's actually the deck's pulled in on one side. If you notice on which side that is, that's so you can sit on your back porch and not get hit by golf balls, because that's what happens on golf course lots. So, you know, they think about that when they lay the houses out. But, so I guess, you know, originally, you know, the staff was recommending the approval of the backyard, but not the front yard. And I guess I'm here to kind of make a case for the front yard. The reason that we have the setbacks in the Ludo for the front yard and the garage, the front of the house and the garage, and they're different. The house is only 15 feet. The garage is 20. The reason the garage is 20 is because 20 feet is considered a parking spot, so they want to have at least 20 feet before the property line, because a lot of times on a standard subdivision, the sidewalk is a foot to 2 feet past the property line. There's the sidewalk, and they don't want cars sticking out the sidewalk and impeding with traffic, the foot traffic on the sidewalk. Well, this subdivision or the PUD doesn't have a sidewalk. So from the curb to the property line, there's actually 5.5 feet there where a normal sidewalk would be. Well, that's not there. So that's pretty much the argument, is the Ludo set up to protect, not have a car stick out in the road or not have it stick out in the sidewalk. Being as we don't have a sidewalk, reducing down to 15 in the front will not change. It'll be pretty much the same setback that you would have on a normal subdivision from the sidewalk to the garage. So you're not making something that's smaller than what is in a normal subdivision, because we don't have a sidewalk, so we have that clear space there to be able to park in.
What is the road wide right away width?
The road's 40 feet. The road itself is 28, so it's not a real narrow road. It's got room to park on one side. It's a 28 foot wide road. There is Wildcat, I think, only a 20 foot wide, so we wouldn't, there's a lot less room. You got cars a lot closer to the curb there, but it's 28 foot wide road and a 40 foot right away.
So where does...
Where's the rest of the right-of-way?
Mm-hmm.
There's only how much paved? 28?
28,
from Wildcat? Just an extra 12 feet.
Right. So you got 6 on each side. The other side's got the other half.
And that's where the PUE is?
No. PUE is outside of it. So you got 40-foot, and then you got a 10-foot PUE. So all the utilities, the house is at 15 feet. When you're saying you move the garage 15 feet, it still gives you the room for the PUE still 5 feet away.
It looks like they got 5.5 feet, and then you've got the 14 feet to the center of the road. That's 19 and a half feet. On the other deal here, that's the 6-inch curb, maybe. And then they got 20 feet from the center to the edge of the right-of-way
part
there.
So it's 20, it's 40. 20 on this side, 14 to the face of the curb, another half a foot, and then,
And they...
Well, that puts the PUE in the 40-foot right-of-way that you have.
Yes.
No, the PUE is out of the right-of-way. It's on the outside of it. It's 10 feet path onto the property. I think I've got a copy of the plat here, but that's where it is.
Over there on the
curvy curve is
28. Curve is 28. Which, for a street, that would be on one side, which you,
That may be the exception to the rule here, but a 15-foot setback on a garage, that's a house I couldn't buy, because I drive a pickup truck that is 21 and a half feet long. And that's if I take the hitch out of it.
Right.
And obviously it's not going in the garage. And I wouldn't particularly want to see that sticking out in the street every night of my life driving home.
Right, well, it wouldn't be sticking out in the street. Well, what's your truck, what length? 21 feet?
21 and a half feet.
Yeah, so it would be right at the curb line if you were parked right against the garage.
Yeah.
And if you were in a standard subdivision, it would be right at the back of the sidewalk if you were parked up against the garage. No difference.
Well, 5.5 plus 15 is 20 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
and he sees 21 and a half or 22.
Wrong one and a half.
So there's one and a half, 1 foot over.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, we were looking for 5 feet. Maybe there's a number that makes everybody a little more comfortable on the front. Like I say, the house we have now, we need 5 feet more to get it in. We wanted some flexibility so all the houses aren't just one row. You can stagger them a little. You know, Ross, he's not here to, you know, he's building these houses. He built them all the way through the recession. He's been selling them and he's keeping going, but you know, it's just the way the economy is now and the way it's been, and just the way he's getting his appraisals, he's just trying to get a little more square footage to be able to sell them to the people that don't have the big down payments and stuff.
So okay. If they can add the 5 feet on the back, he could fit the places on there with the 20 foot in front and 5 foot on the back?
The current one that he has, he could. You know, like I said, it'd be nice to get a little up front if we can't, you know, get the 5, maybe 3 or something to have some flexibility there. But he may have to, you know, if the lot doesn't fit, he may have to make them a little smaller. That's the way, you know, it rolls. But, you know, he's asked me to request this, I think. For a PUD, it falls into what would, you know, they don't, there, it's not a standard subdivision. And it's he's building it as a community, and if you drive up there, he's doing the things, you know, doing the ponds, doing different things. He's spending money on amenities, but yeah, you don't have, like I say, you don't have, you know, for me, I wouldn't buy a house in there. I like a big, I'm on 2.5 acres. I got to have somewhere for my dogs to run and stuff. So it's not my cup of tea, but there is a segment of the population. It is, and a lot of them are retired people or young families that are on the go, and they go, we don't want to deal with a yard.
Okay. You know? I think we've got enough information there we can work with. We may have some rebuttal, but back to you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody who wants to speak in favor of this, proponents to this application? Are there anybody who wants to speak in opposition to this application? Is there anybody who wants to speak at all? All right. With that in mind, then, we'll close the public hearing and open it for a commission discussion.
I'm going to cut to the chase. At least it opens it up for discussion. I'm making a motion, option number 3, basing on findings of the city staff report. I move to deny front yard variance request. I want to keep that 20 feet from the garage from the street. And I don't care if they don't want a backyard, so I would approve the rear yard setback. I'm not going to see it from the street anyway.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, let's have discussion then.
I think that there is some say in talking about maybe allowing 2 feet or something for the front, just to give the builder a little leeway in positioning the houses on the property so that they're not all lined up exactly the same going down the street. He has some flexibility in positioning them on the lots depending on where the walls are on the back, and it just gives them a little flexibility in their building. 2 feet doesn't, most cars have different lengths and people can at least see them and make a choice on whether they're buying them and where they want it. So that's my discussion.
My feeling on this is that you move into a house when you're 30 years old and you've got a Volkswagen then you buy a trailer, then you buy a truck, then you buy, you know, and before you know it, and I think that's the normal course of events, you know, in Oregon. I think that's important also. I'm wondering if there's any way that, this is just kind of something that's running around in my head, if there's any way of having a 5-foot variance, choose your poison. But I can't see five feet here and 2 feet here. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, you know, if you want to move that house like this, okay, but not like this.
So you have 5 feet on the property, so if you move it 2 feet forward, then that's so, the 3 feet in the back. So
I don't know.
My only problem with the 5 foot anywhere, I'm not sure if giving it all 5 foot in the front drops.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if there's any.
I mean, I don't have a problem with 5 foot in the back because
I really don't like any of this, to be honest.
Because I don't, I think backyards is, like he says, I don't see the backyard.
Yeah.
And people can choose if they want more of a backyard or less of a backyard when they buy the house. But I think that I can live with maybe a little bit smaller in the front just to give the builder some flexibility.
See, I'm worried about the people that are, you know, like I say, I think that 20-foot driveway is important. And like he said, you know, we couldn't get our truck in there.
That's right. And that's why I agree with not giving the full five-foot variance. Yeah. However, I did think that he gave one good argument that the builder is continually building for the economy, and if we could give them a little bit of flexibility on where they are putting it, that's a good thing.
Well, 5 feet in the back allows them to get 5 foot more house in there. Mm-hmm.
And if they need 5 feet for this thing, then that means all the houses are going to be lined up exactly the same.
Well, that's way more. A lot of places I have been over the years.
Unless they take it, or they change their designs.
The question I have, our code does not allow us to do is change the setback on the front, is that correct?
It's black and white, but you know, you're having a hearing, you've offered the opportunity for anybody to respond. If I were a lawyer, I'd say you don't have any option. But I'm a little fuzzier in the planning field. It says you can't. It says except for the garage. I mean, No, it's not vague. And it's specifically targeted at garages.
So it was very, very specific. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I read it.
Probably some good reason for that, too. And I think it's our crux.
Yeah, and I don't have too much of a problem with the backyard.
I like that,
all too. The arguments that was made. If you have to do this, then you have to change the size of the house. I don't see an option of changing the front yard. Just because of the... Because someone else is going to follow up and say, well, you did it for them, why can't you do it for me?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, is there any more discussion? Because we do have a motion on the floor. And the motion is, it was number 3, is that correct?
It was 3.
Denying the front yard variance, but approving the rear setback. Is there any more discussion?
Okay. Commissioner Klassen?
Aye.
Commissioner Flick?
Aye.
Commissioner Sarnowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Vansickle?
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner?
Aye.
And Chair Lesby?
Aye.
Okay. Number 2 down. The third public hearing is 2015-03-VAR. It's variance for lot coverage variance for needle. And the staff report.
Yes, sir. This also, I had a much closer look at the situation there today, so I'm probably going to vary a little bit from what the staff report says.
This is a request for a variance to exceed the maximum, in this case, 35% lot coverage standard, because this is an RH zone, that's residential hillside, and it has more unstable soils, therefore, theoretically, less lot coverage will help to minimize the instability of the soils. And everyone knows where we are, right, in the Knowles Estates. This has lot has direct access on the Culver Loop Road, and it's vacant right now, sewer water's there, it's already developed. The RH zone is meant to be a low density area with a single family preference. Does require a geotech study and report for every house that goes up because of the geologic ground. The minimum lot size is 12,000 square feet, and then there's some other dimensions there, and what we're talking about is the lot coverage of 35%. The okay, so here we are with the PUD again, right? Knowles Estates is a PUD. And so this lot is not 12,000 square feet, it's 8,276 square feet. And so that's your starting point of measuring your 35%. And based on the 35% of 8,276 allows 2,896 square feet of impervious surface. And that should include pavement. The house, the garage, and the, I'm on page two if you need to follow in these numbers, and the covered entry and the covered patio are an estimated 3,514 square feet or 42% of the parcel. What is not added in here is the paved driveway, the sidewalk, and the golf cart path in the back, which is going to add several hundred more square feet. Again, I didn't have a scale drawing to figure that out, but I didn't need to because that's well over the 35%, but I want to make sure you know that there's a lot more impervious surface there. So now we're in a type 3 hearing because it does exceed by more than 10% the 35% coverage. And the criteria for a Class C approval are one, oh, it shells, how many are A, B, C, D, E, and F, and the code says that all of these have to be satisfied. So this is not easy to meet all of these criteria, just as a starting point. Will this proposed variance be materially detrimental to the purpose of the code and or to the land use district or to the neighborhood, the vicinity? And so, you know, there's the question about precedence, but obviously we're exceeding the coverage, the air, light, privacy, and landscaping, and in this case, even the imperviousness is really most important, probably of all. Are we meeting the code by allowing this variance? It's not known if the Knowles Estates PUD was approved knowing that coverage would be difficult to achieve because the lot sizes are not 12,000 square feet, and there's a lot of swales and slopes and change in the topography up there that you can't build on quite a bit of it. So in fact, there is a lot of open space, again, in between these houses. The golf course one we just looked at is a little more even, but this one has a lot of change in topography. And so I guess that's what happened in the approval. As I've gone over and over these two, and it gets a little bit confusing, then I realize, well, you can vary lot coverage in a PUD. We read that earlier in the last staff report, if you remember. It says you can't vary the garage setback, but you can vary your lot coverage. There's no explanation about what they varied, except that there's some intention to do that here. Because if you go up there, most of the houses far exceed 35% lot coverage. And I didn't realize that until I went up there today.
No, they don't.
I think.
Not if you do the hills and the land that's there.
Well, for the shape of the lot itself, not because those other spaces are separated out. I mean, if you somehow averaged in
all of those open spaces. But for the lots themselves, which are defined, and with the, you know, the paved golf cart areas and all the impervious is quite a bit, the driveways, it's not just the house, it's all the pavement as well. It's, well, anyway, that's the way it looked to me, but, I mean, it looked really, and then we looked at an aerial as well, and you can see exactly the coverage of all those existing houses. So maybe that was the intent all along.
But that was from the 12,000 square foot, the 35%, right?
Well, you know,
or was it the final
35%
of the final?
It's, you shall meet the standards. When you build a house, you look at the standards. It says 35%. Well, guess what? We don't have a 12,000 square foot lot anymore. That's a low percentage of coverage. 35%. You know, the one we just looked at was 50. R1. Now we're down to 35. Okay, that's really reducing. And then you've got a lot that's not meeting the standard. So you've really reduced your options here. And you know, so it's difficult to figure out how to interpret what happened before and what was the intent and what the code's saying today. Because it says, you know, you can approve a, you can reduce lot coverage in a PUD. Okay? We did, and we have on several houses. I honestly believe several, if not most of those houses, cover more than 35% of just their defined lot. And without any variances, so I don't know if the city just took the building permit in, checked the setbacks. Lot coverage sometimes isn't, it's not always on everybody's radar. I don't know what's happened. So now here we are where we've seen this proposal and it does exceed it. So is it a hardship on this person to have to meet it when the others didn't? And so I have a different angle on it compared to what I saw up there today. You know, obviously it's self-imposed. I mean, you can make a smaller house and less pavement and meet the standard. But is that fair to somebody halfway through the process here if the others had not? And if you want, we can go back and measure everything, but I did have a second set of eyes with me. Can you verify?
Yeah.
That I'm not exaggerating?
Based on what we looked at, a majority of those houses up there.
Already
built.
Well, I've got family that's been shopping for houses, and I've been going with them quite a bit. And I can honestly tell you, most new homes and most new developments are tiny little side yards, tiny little backyards. They're filling the entire lots.
You know, it's a lifestyle. I mean, I'm not criticizing it, that's what they bought, I think, right. Or that's what they want.
And that's Roseburg, Winchester, Sutherland, every place.
What makes this unusual is the residential hillside.
Yeah.
And the 35%, right.
Yeah, if it wasn't, I think if you looked at the original plat, it was looked like everything was flat.
Exactly.
So then it looked, oh, that's fine. We can get down to the 8,000 square foot or whatever.
And we just can modify
that. You can still fit a house in there and meet all the setbacks, not realizing this. The limitations you have.
In hindsight, it's 20/20. You know, when you saw it on the plat, you didn't know, nobody thought about 35%. So, you know, my findings are kind of weak based on what I think is up there. And, you know, I'll leave it to you to decide, but.
Okay. Well, I think over the years, lot sizes have gotten quite a bit smaller, too, in these developments. When you look at the older developments, yeah. The lots are, you know, twice the size they are now. So 35% 10 years ago may have been doable, but now with the new lot sizes, you know, they're trying to squeeze as many houses into a development as they can. There's no way you can do 35%. You can use it in a shed, one of those tough sheds from
if you have 12,000
stuck
square
in the corner for 35%, yeah.
I'm sorry, but I forgot one more thing. I should point, make sure you saw the Knowles Estates Homeowners Association letter that was of April 10th, and they're in opposition to it, or an objection, they object to it, and they're afraid that 35% will set a precedent if it's exceeded, and
so
I have not seen this lot. Does it trail down from the road or up?
No, it's
it's kind of low in the middle, and then it's, and it, it,
it's fairly flat.
It's fairly flat, yeah. It's fairly flat.
But still has an RH zoning on it.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think it's on the edge of the RH zone. You still have to do the geotech report.
Yeah.
And every one of those houses theoretically has. So.
So did this get brought to our attention because he was showing the plans, or did someone complain, or?
No, well, the plans came in, and we looked at not only setbacks, but we looked at lot coverage and didn't meet it.
That's what triggered it.
And I don't honestly don't know if that was always looked at before. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I wonder when sharp eyes over there.
When we get, when there's these other ones, like in this letter that says that there are several other ones and points out addresses that are over that, how come those were missed? And
as far as lot coverage, I can't tell you because I haven't been in my position or even in this department. So, and there's nobody there that has.
Michelle.
So you don't have a history to go back to, but.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that was like that.
No, I would say not.
Just a little bit of information. The lots that were given as examples, I went back and researched and found that they were development sold. That means that if you wanted to build an apartment house on one of those lots, they probably would have sold it to you. And I don't know what was going on at City Hall at that time, but whatever came through was rubber stamped. I don't think anything was looked at. The first build up there, there are more defects than there should be. And a lot of that is of the city.
Okay, let's go ahead and have the applicant's report. Let him make his case.
Good evening. My name is Brent Guido. Do I need to sell my address?
Sure, why not?
308 Clearview Drive, Roseburg.
This is a hit team after you.
All right. So I'm basically just an expiring developer, I guess. My uncle actually owns the lot and has owned the lot for probably 10 years. And just, you know, the economy's getting better. And I want to take a stab at kind of building a spec house. So what a better way than he's kind of helping me get through with the lot and I'm going to build the house. Well, actually what's did the whole thing was I put together what I thought I wanted to build, and I took it to Christy at the city, and she goes, hey, this doesn't meet. Basically, that was the first step. I was just seeing what I had to go through. And then it kind of opened this whole thing up, a can of worms, right? I thought I was going to go down and pay my money and build a house. Obviously not. A couple things I want to note. Back to lot or house sizes. A few doors up at 616 Arney Court, the 4,058 square foot house on an 8,700 square foot lot. 1828 Culver Loop, three doors up, 3,325 square foot, livable. These are livable spaces. 1826, two doors up, just built a few years ago, 2,600 square feet. All these houses are bigger than what I proposed to build. I want 2,400 square foot house. I don't know what's happened in the past. I think the precedent's already been set. I'm not asking to build some monstrosity. I'm not asking to build outside. I don't want a variance for the driveway. I don't want a variance for the backyard, side yard. I do want a concrete driveway. I want some sidewalks, covered porches. These are all things I think make houses sell. I want to build a nice home that I think is an addition to the Oak Mills, not an eyesore, as the letter says. I'm here to answer any questions. One thing I will note, to date, I think my uncle's owned the lot for 10 years. I think it's actually been built for 12 or so. Taxes up there are like $500 a year. If this house were to be built, and I kind of got some comps, it should be around $3,300 a year. In 12 years, that's a difference of $33,600 in taxes. So I think it's pretty major. I do want to do the project here in Sutherland, but if I can't get a variance to build a house that I feel is acceptable
and sellable in today's market, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in building a 1,400 square foot house.
You couldn't build a
1,400. On a golf. Well, it is. That's talking to Joe. 1,400 square foot is the minimum. That's going to ruin a beautiful golf course lot. One of the only ones left. There's not that many that are left on the course. So, and to answer your question, it's R1 in my backyard. So step out the backyard, it's R1. 50% coverage, we want to have this conversation. So that's kind of my report. I'm at your
1,400 square foot house.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Is there anybody else who wants to speak in favor of this application? Finally get to speak after sitting here.
I get to say so. I'm the bad uncle. I had that lot for 10 years, and I bought that lot, you know, to build a house on. Well, I decided not to live there, but he came with this proposal, and I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a nice home. And he wants to build it to put in the home show coming up. Hopefully, we'll get it passed, get it built. I think it'll be a good deal. So whatever you can do for us, we appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to speak in favor? Anybody want to speak in opposition? Oh, you're lucky. Nobody came. We do have the letter, I guess, the submission. So any other, there is nobody else here, is there? Okay, so we'll close the public hearing and open for discussion among the members.
May I send you to page 4 and say that if I set the sentiment I hear is for approving the variance, that number one would be that motion, and then I would rewrite these findings based on pretty much what was said, compared to what's stated.
If the thing had not been residential hillside, this would not have come before us.
Correct.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't know what the impervious surface would have added up to. It might have been close, but it's still.
Not counting the fact that there's already houses just like it built other places. Okay.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
What about if they're worried about movement of the ground and stuff, what about being able to put footings down to and drilled into solid, found, you know,
well,
rock.
The
rock and stuff.
Geotech.
Yeah, I don't think we can require that, but the geotech report will have recommendations that they'll have to follow.
Which is I don't know if anybody can answer the question. A lot of those houses are, you know, hillside built in there. I mean, are they all sitting on caissons or...
Just depends on what the engineer said.
What the engineer requires.
It'd be nice to know how it turned out underneath. I don't know.
And I don't think it's just houses, it's any construction. Because I have had to do the same thing with the shop that I'm trying to build.
Yeah. Well, you're RH also.
Yeah. I had to hire a guy to come out.
Yep.
Soil test.
What did he say?
Said it's fine. I have to dig a deep wall, but. It's all decomposed sandstone up where I am, though, but it just depends.
We went up there today.
Yeah. I thought I saw you guys.
Oh, were you home?
I was leaving as you were driving out.
Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion?
I just, I'm not voting on this, believe me, because there's no way I can be impartial. But I want everyone to know here that these houses that were built too big was done by the developer, not by the PUD board of directors. And one of our biggest fears is that a variance is given. We've got a lot of empty lots up there, and we really don't want houses filling all the lot. You know what I'm saying? And that's what our board is afraid of. 2,400 square foot home, it could be a 22, 21. I mean, you know, we don't want to set a precedence that the board in any way, shape, or form approves of this variance for the simple reason we have so many empty lots. And we're terrified that we're going to get this over and over and over again. And we are trying to maintain a community that is above desirable.
sense.
Well, this is a problem for us, actually, at the next ones that come in.
Have all of the oversized houses built up there come through here first?
No.
Just out of curiosity,
we're
though.
We're not sure why or what happened there.
Are there, there's a, I'm assuming it's up like where I am, there's a minimum home size. Yeah. Do you know what it is?
1,500 square feet.
So if it's 1,500 square feet, are there any lots up there that are
too small?
Too
for
small that.
Not to the best of my knowledge. You know, I.
That might be something to look into.
Okay, because I know most of the remaining lots are pretty good size.
Because if you've got a small lot and you have to stay to under 35%, and there's, and you can't even come in under, you can't even come in over the 1,500 square foot, what do you do with that lot at that point?
Yeah.
Well, I don't see how, unless you go to the people that are already violating these rules and fine them heavily or make them tear their houses out, you cannot grant the variance for this gentleman, or he has a major gripe. Right.
No,
now.
I agree. Period. Totally. I agree totally with what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, at some point, the city has to own up and put a stop to it. You know, where does it stop? You know, you get a variance for just like this guy with this 20-foot driveway. Two or three of us are sitting here with trucks that wouldn't fit on, couldn't park it at home. You know, where do you?
I think this one, what the tipping point for this one is the difference between residential hillside and a regular zone.
I think it's all we're asking is, you know, if you want to give this gentleman this, just be aware of the fact that the Homeowners Association is very concerned that the city is going to allow our community to be overbuilt.
Well, but I think it's going to have to come through us on a case-by-case basis anyways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Every single one. I mean, if we're
well,
if we're
this is the first one that's ever come before the Planning Commission, that's scary.
Exactly, but things have changed at this point.
The 35% coverage, maximum coverage, is really based on a regular size residential hillside lot, which would be much larger than his lot to start with. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it was supposed to be 12.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 12,000 square feet minimum.
That turns out to be a lot bigger house.
Okay. Yeah. So this is just a very odd case because you have lot sizes that don't comply because of the PUD, and then they try to apply that 35% coverage against that size is difficult.
No, I but believe me, I agree totally. But I want to make sure that everyone sitting at this counter realizes the feelings of the owners that are there now.
I think what will happen now, because of the diligence of the staff,
if they get rid of me,
will come. Each one will come, because now they're looking at the 35% coverage, which automatically generates it to a public hearing implicit in this situation. So we will be able to.
Well, if they exceed that, yeah.
And so they'll have to make that same argument before us. This one, was an easier argument to agree with than the one before, for example.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're not basing our vote or our decision on past wrongdoings.
Yeah.
You know, we get into that two wrongs doesn't make a right.
Well, I think right now what we're doing is what the Planning Commission was always supposed to have done, and has historically not. I'll be here next month to see if I can put a shop in, because it's too tall, for the same reason, because they're paying attention, which is okay, but that's what we're supposed to do. So everything's going to come here based on a case-by-case basis. So say somebody wants to build a house on Knowles Estate that is on a, you know, it's a mid-sized lot, and they want to build a 7,000-foot monstrosity with 2-foot setbacks on each side. You're going to look at it and say, no, it just doesn't fit. Right. And it's going to be case-by-case. It has to be.
It's either that or you go back and amend the code, or you make some kind of amend the PUD approval, saying this...
Boy, it's hard to change that PUD, though. But like you said, it's already, one mistake has been made.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems with PUDs.
That's fine. Now I get it. Remember, we're talking about this?
Yeah, that's almost every new development.
The original thing should be up to code to start with, so, but it wasn't, so we're stuck with what we have.
Well, we tried to get that to the city council, too. PUD or not PUD, we built to city code.
Built to city code.
We tried.
Okay, we've had a lot of discussion. Are we ready for any kind of a motion?
I make a motion that based on the application and revised findings, I move to approve the variance request.
I have a motion. Second.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Go ahead. Commissioner Klassen abstaining?
Abstain.
Commissioner Flick?
That's not the answer.
It doesn't qualify.
All of this is going to be on the exception, of the geological whatever.
Yeah, I have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Commissioner Sarnowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Van Sickle?
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner?
Aye.
And Chair Lesby?
Aye. I appreciate what you said. I think that it needs to be examined, each one, so that we don't have this runaway building.
Well, I know that the votes are not, I want everybody to know the main reason that letter is there is we have all kinds of crazy stuff come before the board. And if we once start divvying, we're in big trouble.
Well, you know where we stand is this goes to the city council, so they do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And they've been known to do other things. So.
Yeah. This goes to the
this one does.
Oh, this doesn't.
No,
all right.
Well,
that's
not everything.
No, no,
no.
Just the habitat's the only one. Oh, it goes pit by appeal.
Yeah, they could appeal if they don't like your decision.
Oh. But I think he's okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to appeal our decision?
Even the mean uncle approves.
Well, look at it this way. If we put a 1,500 square foot house next to a golf course, next to all those 2,600 square foot houses, what's that going to look like?
No one's going to buy it.
Exactly. You know.
But like you said, everybody else didn't have to come through this, and this cost a lot of money.
Yep.
I mean, either way you look at it, it's not. I feel it's not fair that, I don't know, you guys should look at your PUDs, because if it's 12,000 square foot lot size, that means you get 4,200 square feet of coverage. We shouldn't have to be here.
So. The PUDs have had a lot of problems here.
Thank you.
Okay, the rest of the agenda items, monthly activity report, you see that.
I'm not going to go over it. You guys can read it. If you have questions, let me know. Shoot me an email.
Okay. Any commission comments? If not, I move to adjourn. We adjourn. I can vote for second and third.
I knew you wanted to go.